The Apostle Paul was a great friend maker, and there are more than 100 different Christians, named and unnamed, associated with Paul in the book of Acts and in the letters. In fact, in one chapter alone, Romans chapter 16, he mentions 26 different friends by name. Paul enjoyed team ministry, working with others. And obviously you can always achieve far more as a team than you can as an individual. When I go into Sarsby Junior School and take their assemblies, on the wall behind me they have an acrostic for the word team. And all those letters, T-E-A-M, spell out together, we can achieve more. And the Apostle Paul certainly believed that principle. There's a cartoon in one of the Christian magazines of two rowing boats. In one rowing boat, there was a man with a dog collar. In his hands were a punting pole as he tried to make headway. In the other boat were a whole load of people cheering him on. Come on, you can do it, you can do it. Of course, that boat was obviously flying past all the others. And the punchline was this: which boat is yours, or which church is yours? Are you one man just punting away, trying to make headway? Are you, I think I missed the second boat out, like the boat of rowers all pulling together? Or are you like those sitting on the side cheering along? If we are a Christian, then we're part of the crew and we're expected to pull together. I like the wit who said, in our church there are 560 members, but 100 are frail and elderly. That leaves 460 to do all the work. But 74 are young people at college. That leaves 386 to do all the work. But 150 are tired businessmen. So that leaves 236 to do all the work. 150 are housewives with children. That leaves 86. A third of 46 have other important interests. That leaves 40 to do all the work. But 15 live too far away to come regularly. So that leaves 25 to do all the work. And 23 say they've done their bit. So that leaves you and me. And I'm exhausted. Good luck to you. You get the point. For a local church to function properly, we need to function as a team. The old theological term, or the old-fashioned term, was the priesthood of all believers. In modern language, that would be every member ministry. We all have something to contribute to make the church work correctly. Well, in his closing remarks, the Apostle Paul emphasizes three things. Number one, he talks about being together in verse 12, being together. As soon as I send Artemis or Tychicus to you, do your best to come to me, for I've decided to winter there. In this verse, the Apostle Paul mentions two people. Artemis, in fact, we don't know anything about him apart from his name. His pedigree, his credentials, his talents are buried in antiquity. He's like a meteor in the sky. He appears and he vanishes. But I think Artemis is a good example of a faithful believer who served God, whose deeds are not announced for the whole world to know, but he was a key player in the ministry and in the life of the Apostle Paul. Leonard Bernstein, director of the New York Philharmonic Orchestra, was once asked, what is the most difficult instrument to play? He replied, second fiddle. I can find lots of people who want to play lead, but nobody wants to play second fiddle with enthusiasm. And that's the problem. For if we have no second fiddle, we have no harmony. The Apostle Paul had people who played second fiddle, and Artemis was one of them. He may go unnoticed to the majority, but he was important to Paul, and so he gets a name check. And Artemis, as a fellow worker with Paul, and a comfort to Paul, and that's all we know about him. But the Lord thought him worthy enough to give him a name check, to give him a mention. I've often said, in the human body, it is the hidden organs that are the most important. I could survive if I lost an arm or a leg, but I can't survive without a kidney or a liver or a heart. It's those hidden organs that keep the body functioning in a healthy way. The second one mentioned is Tychicus, who in contrast to the first man, he's mentioned five times. And if you get yourself a concordance, you can do a little Bible study on him. For example, in Acts chapter 20, verse 4, we're told that Tychicus was from the Roman province of Asia. The Western text indicates he was probably an Ephesian. In Ephesians 6, verse 21, Paul describes him as a dear brother and faithful servant in the Lord. And then in Colossians 4, 17, he calls him a dear brother, a faithful minister, and a fellow servant in the Lord. In both Ephesians and Colossians, Paul indicates that he is sending Tychicus to the Christians in those places to encourage them, to support them, and to comfort them. And then in Colossians 4:8, he tells us that he was going to reassure them. And he was also Paul's mailman. He delivered by hand the letter of Philemon, the letter of Colossians, and the letter of Ephesians. And again, if you check out his name in the concordance, you'll find the references for those. We don't read of any great spiritual feats or miracles that Tychicus did. He was not an apostle. He was not a pastor. To our knowledge, he held no position in the church whatsoever. Simply a man who was a helper. A helper. We might say a gopher. When Paul had a job that needed did, he goed. He would go for it. Someone has said the greatest ability in the world is dependability. And Paul could depend upon Tychicus, a man who supported him and got the job done. American General Eisenhower, the 34th President of the United States, and of course a key player in the Second World War, on one occasion he heard one of his commanders criticizing a soldier, a private. And Eisenhower rebuked the colonel, and he reminded him that the army could function better without its generals than it could without its foot soldiers. If this war is won, he said, it will be won by the privates. As you know, we are in the summertime and are involved in summer camps. And in fact, there'll be a few weeks' time and we'll be taking youngsters away on our May house party. But for those house parties and those summer camps to work, they only work because we've got a team of Tychicuses. People who are dependable, who come along. And I stand out the front and I'm the mouth, I'm the voice, I might preach the sermons. And I've got one or two of us who might give out the orders because they're like commanding officers, those who keep camp running. But actually, camp couldn't survive if we didn't have a team of people who clean the toilets and wash out the shower room, and people who go off site and buy food for us daily, and those who maintain the tents, and all those people in the background. Together, we can achieve more. We all need, in our churches and in any ministry, people like Tychicus. Now, Paul's plan was to spend winter in the Adriatic town of Nicopolis. It seems likely he never made it there. Or if he did, he was only there for a short time. Nobody knows where Paul was when he wrote these words to Titus. It would appear he wasn't in prison at this time. But later on, he wrote the exact same words to Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 21. And when he wrote those words to Timothy, he was in the Mamertine dungeon in Rome. And though he longed for the companionship of friends, many believed these people never arrived to comfort him in time. According to one tradition, he was beheaded by an official of Nero on the Ostian Road outside of Rome, shortly after he sent the second letter to Timothy. His plea, he wanted friends together in his last days, his last months, his last hours. Secondly, verse 13 tells us, verse 12, being together, verse 13, helping others. Do everything you can to help Zenas the lawyer and Apollos on their way, and see that they have everything they need. Once again, two people are named for us. Zenas the lawyer, his name only appears here, we know nothing else about him. Apollos, on the other hand, was a polished preacher. And we're told he had a great knowledge of the scriptures. You can read about him in Acts chapter 18, verse 24. And these two were chosen by Paul to carry the letter of Titus on their way, to deliver it as they were going about other missionary assignments. And Paul's advice to the church at Crete is simple. When they get to you, do everything you can to help these two men in the ministry. In other words, life is enriched. Church life is enriched when we're practically involved in helping one another. Story told of a little three-year-old girl who shouted downstairs to her mum, "Mum, Mum, can you help me get undressed for bed?" Mum replied, "I'll be up in a minute. Get yourself ready and I'll tuck you in and give you a kiss before you go to sleep." But the little girl didn't want that, so she shouted down, "Mum, help me. I do know how to undress myself, but sometimes people need people anyway, even if they know how to do things by themselves." Paul's advice to the Christians here, do everything you can to help these two men. He believed in that principle, team. Together, everyone achieves more. And then in verse 14, he talks about doing good. Doing good. Verse 12, being together. Verse 13, helping others. Verse 14, doing good. Our people, the local church, the Christians, must learn to devote themselves to doing what is good in order to provide for urgent needs and not live unproductive lives. To me, there are three things he says there. Number one, it is not natural, it is a learnt trait to do good deeds. According to this verse, doing good is something we learn. And the example of Titus doing good to Zenas and Apollos was an open illustration for the rest of the church to watch and to see and to learn. Someone has said, this is how we learn. 1% through taste, 1.5% through touch, 3.5% through smell, 11% through hearing, 83% through sight. Now that may or may not be true, but Paul gave them a visual opportunity to see Zenas and Apollos being helped by Titus, and they could copy it, learn from them, watch and copy. Secondly, Paul instructed Titus to teach people how to take care of urgent needs. Urgent needs. He's already said two things about good works in this letter. In chapter 1, verse 8, he said, love what is good. In chapter 2, verse 3, he says, teach what is good. And now in this verse, chapter 3, verse 14, he says, do what is good. Love it, teach it, do it. And the emphasis here is urgent needs. There are some things that need our attention straight away. If you don't seize that opportunity, it will be gone. You can only help Zenas and Apollos while they're with you. You can't help them the following week. They won't be there. Just as when the GLOW team come to work amongst us, if we don't help them when they're here, too late. They'll be gone. Thomas Edison said, opportunity is missed by most people because it is dressed up in overalls and looks like work. And of course, to help someone requires effort and time. Thirdly, he says, it's not lateral, it's a learnt trait. Secondly, he says, take care of urgent needs. Thirdly, he says, Titus was to encourage the Christians, and as he did that, that brings a reward. Helping others brings a reward. The end of the verse, he says, and not live unproductive lives. In other words, if you don't do good works, if you don't get involved, your life is unproductive. And so the opposite is true. If you do get involved, if you do help other people, then you are fruitful. You are productive in your life. I like the story of the barber in a small town who a police officer came in for a haircut. And the barber gave him a shot back inside. And when he went to pay, he said no. He said, you're a pillar of our community. You do the kind of work nobody else would want to do. You work in sociable hours. Everyone criticises you. You're there to help the community. This haircut is on me. So the policeman said, well, thank you very much. Next day, when he turned to open up his barber shop, there was a bag on the doorstep and it had 12 donuts and a little note saying, thank you. Well, later on that day, a local florist came in and the barber gave him a haircut and said to him, it's on the house. You do good work in the community. We appreciate that you spend extra hours trimming the bushes so that the area looks nice. You send flowers down to the hospital or to the old people's home. You know, you do a good work in the community. No charge at all. So the florist said, thank you very much. Well, the next day he turned up for work. There was a bunch of flowers on the doorstep. That day a local preacher came in for a haircut. So the barber gave him a haircut and no charge, he said. You do a good work in the community. You comfort, you encourage, you do work here, there and everywhere. It's on me. Next day, he found six other preachers standing on his doorstep. I'm not sure why I told you that. I'm sure there's a point here. If we become occupied in good works, it brings a reward. You may not get donuts or flowers in return. You may find there are other people who turn up expecting a handout too. But actually, the principle of the scripture is as we do good to others, so that is like a boomerang, it comes back upon us. It gives us the opportunity to put our faith in action. So in conclusion, he says, love what is good, teach what is good, do what is good. A final quote, someone said, some people are like good watches. They're pure gold, open-faced, always on time, dependable, quietly busy, and full of good works. May you be a good watch this week. Let's pray.